a Your Vote 2016 discussion of Question 2 on the November ballot, an act to establish the fund to advance public kindergarten to grade 12 education. In 2004, Maine people passed a referendum mandating that the state boost school funding to 55% of what's called essential programs and services. That never happened. Right now, the state provides school districts an average of 47% funding, but some districts get more and some get much less. Question 2 is designed to address this shortfall by providing a fund for public education. It would do so by boosting income taxes on income above $200,000 a year. Supporters of the measure say we need to better fund our schools. Opponents say it would make Maine's income tax rate too high. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, as part of Maine Public's Your Vote 2016 coverage, we'll debate Question 2. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Television Studios in Lewiston, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is a Maine Calling Your Vote 2016 election special. Today, a debate on Question 2 on the November ballot. It reads, do you want to add a 3% tax on individual Maine taxable income above $200,000 to create a state fund that would provide direct support for student learning in kindergarten through 12th grade public education? Representing No on One, Ed Cervone. He is Executive Director of Educate Maine. And representing Yes on One, John Kozinski, Campaign Manager for the Stand Up for Students Initiative. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Join our conversation yourself. This is Maine Calling, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. And a quick disclaimer, the Maine Education Association is a proponent of Yes on 2, and MEA represents some of the employees here at Maine Public. John, I think it's easy to understand why teachers and parents are frustrated by the level of school funding. Tell me why your organization chose this path to try to boost education funding in Maine.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. I'm the campaign manager for Yes on 2. We feel Yes on 2 is a solution to a number of the problems that Maine has faced in the past decade, underfunding schools. And that's a place where I think, Ed, even the opposition to Question 2 agrees. We have underfunded public education throughout this state for about a decade now, and we've got to change that. What Question 2 is also about, in addition to educational opportunity for kids, it's also about tax fairness. There's only so many ways we can fund our public schools in Maine. And right now, out of Augusta, what we've seen is more reliance on property taxes across the state to try to provide the best educational opportunities we can for kids. That's not a sustainable path. That's not a reliable path. Instead, we need the state to meet its obligation to our kids and to our communities to more adequately fund our schools. We have seen over the past 5 years out of Augusta two huge tax cuts that overwhelmingly benefit the wealthiest Mainers. Those who are making more than $200,000 have seen tax relief, while the rest of us have been left with underfunded schools and higher property taxes, even a higher sales tax. When you look at our tax code in Maine, middle-class families are paying more of their income in taxes than the wealthiest Mainers. Again, this is not good for Maine, not good for kids. Question 2 is about educational opportunity. It's about trying to provide more opportunities to kids all over the state, but also asking the wealthiest. It's about tax fairness. It's about asking the wealthiest Mainers to chip in just a little bit more to try to better fund our public schools all over the state.
All right, Ed, you're committed to education in Maine. You've been on Maine Calling to talk about education in Maine. Why are you opposed to this measure?
Well, my organization looked at this and said, and John had mentioned it, is it about improving opportunities for Maine students? So if you have, whatever it is, approximately $150 million more above baseline funding, is this the best way to use it and fund it in terms of advancing kids? And we, after review, we said no. And the reason we said no primarily is because in raising the money, what we essentially are doing is putting it back into the existing formula, the EPS formula, to distribute it by
the variables. Let me stop you. EPS stands for Essential Programs and Services.
Yes, yeah, sorry. Well, no more jargon there.
Well, that's okay. Yeah. I think anybody who covered the news about a decade ago knows this very well.
Sure.
But for those of new to Maine, it establishes some baseline that is agreed that every school district needs to do these things.
Yes. And so we look at, and if you look across Maine, about 50% of the kids on average in our districts are eligible for free and reduced lunch. And for the listeners, it's 185 percent of poverty. It's around 44,000 for a family of four. It's an indication of ability to pay and need. And even though that's the average, we go from district to district, and some of the schools and some of the buildings actually have that rate as high as 80 or 85%. And in looking at how the bill is worded, and although we agree there's absolutely need, and that need differs around the state, we do not believe that the funding mechanism, or rather the distribution mechanism that's put forth, will actually get to those kids who need it most. We unfortunately are not in a place where we have unlimited funds for every kid, because every kid deserves a good education. But we have finite funds, so we do need to ask who's going to benefit the most, who can get the most from this. And we think it really needs to focus on kids and families from low-income communities.
And so when you say you don't believe the way that this referendum is written, in this way the funds would be reallocated, my reading is that it brings every school district up to 55% EPS, and you say that that would benefit districts that are in wealthier communities disproportionately.
If you run the analysis, and the analysis, and John knows this, is we've taken this from the MEA website, is if you were to pass this measure and distribute the funds per the schools, some of the schools, particularly called low receiver schools, who have high property values, usually around the coast or around a lake or these types of things, have high property values, but maybe not high-income citizens, a lot of them are already at their 55%. So just by the formula, and this is not an effect of where we wanted to put it or not, but it's just where the formula is and by what we're recommending here, some of them are already there. The estimate's around 85 districts who are going to be already there, so they're not going to see any additional funds. The way the formula works is a lot of that money is going to go towards districts such in the southern end of the state, the Portlands, the Falmouths, the Yarmouths, the bigger population centers are going to see the majority of this additional funds should it pass. And that's not in and of itself bad. Those kids are just as deserving as others. But again, my board looked at this and said if I had $150 million to spend to improve outcomes from education, we would identify a variety of other needs that the formula is not going to allow you to direct it to. So again, we've taken issue not with whether schools need money or whether teachers are worth it, but we've taken issue with a formula that won't necessarily get that money to where it needs to go.
And John, what about that? Do you feel comfortable that if question two passes, that the money would be fairly allocated and would best represent where money needs to go in this state?
Most definitely. Let me just a couple points. And I really appreciate Ed and Educate Maine stipulating we don't have enough funding for our schools. But let me just hit a couple things. The legislature, at the request of Governor LePage, conducted a five-year evaluation of our school funding formula. National experts have come into Maine, and after $500,000 of research and analysis, they say the school funding formula is among the most equitable in the country. There's not enough resources going into it. And what I hear the opposition say time and time again is 85 towns won't get any money if this passes. What they fail to mention is about half those towns don't even have schools. So the idea behind question two is actually supporting schools. So there are some towns that don't operate schools, and the tuition process is governed through a whole other section of law. The places those kids go to school will be receiving extra funding. But this is just the kind of confusion that's out there among some voters that we're hearing from the opposition to say 85 towns don't get any money, but about half those towns don't have any schools. We know, again, from this national PICUS report, we know where Maine is falling down. Pre-K, extended learning opportunities for kids, summer school, after school programs. We know that our kids have needs, and we're not meeting those needs currently. And instead, what we've seen is the state short fund our schools, so they're not able to move the dial on these things. More AP classes, more gifted and talented programs. That's all outlined in the 5 years of research that PICUS and Associates has done on our school funding formula, only to tell us it's equitable. It's just not, there's not enough funding going into it. And one last point. In 2003 and 2004, the voters asked the state to fund 55% of the cost of public schools. They got close in 2008, but I want to point out to the listeners and viewers, those kids who were in kindergarten when that first passed are now seniors in high school. So an entire generation of students has gone through our public schools waiting for politicians to figure this out. Question two is the solution right in front of us right now. It's equitable. It's fair. It's going to provide resources to schools all over this state. And we think it'll move the dial for kids to help meet the needs of more kids.
If you'd like to join the conversation, our number 1-800-399-3566. John, how would the money be used and what uses would be prohibited under the way this referendum is written?
Thank you. There's one clear prohibition. It cannot be used for administrative costs. That's written into the initiative clear as day. The initiative says that this money must be used to support direct support for student learning. Every year, school boards are going to have to identify exactly how they spent the money. And it says in the initiative that can include things like hiring more teachers, guidance counselors, social workers. There's just a story today in the Bangor Daily about how schools can't find foreign language teachers around our state. You can use this money to try to find foreign language teachers for schools all over the state. The one prohibition is it can't be used for administrative costs. Every year, school districts are going to have to show that they bought new textbooks, new technology, maybe hired that social worker they needed, maybe started that pre-K program that they've been unable to fund because the state hasn't met its obligation. Every year, they're going to show how this money was directed to direct support for student learning. The idea is to get this money as close to kids and in the classroom as possible.
Ed, you see problems, though, with how the money is being allocated or potential problems in the future.
Yeah, and there was no intent to create these problems, but the way it was written, and I urge everyone to go into the Secretary of State's site. It is one of the shorter ballot pieces on our election, so it's easy to understand. So go and inform yourself. But John makes a good point. So there was Nick McRae just released that article on how hard it is to find foreign language teachers. That's a very acute problem in rural districts. And if you think about it, there's a national teacher shortage. So if you look at the national realm and then you're in Maine, so it's hard to get people to come to Maine anyway, and that's for any worker, including teachers. Then you add to it, I'm in a rural district. Maybe I'm in western Maine, maybe I'm in down eastern northern Maine. So I'm already behind the eight ball so many ways. We talk to a lot of our teachers, we talk to a lot of our administrators who say, particularly in the southern end of the state, if you're in western Maine, and we heard about this over in Poland, is you can attract a teacher, this foreign language teacher, you can get that person interested, but the ability to pay of many of the more well-to-do communities who are just east in the Portland area, the Gray, New Gloucester area, for instance, when that district can throw $5,000 more at that teacher for the same position because there's a need, they can't compete. And so when we look at the way this funding is distributed, it's going to go to a lot of those schools who already have the means and need to compete. You're not creating any equity, or you're not closing the gap, the purchasing gap for these schools in order to be competitive with their more affluent peers. So again, it's a real issue. We need to get those teachers. We need to get that done. But the way it distributes doesn't give them any ground on their peers.
Ed, one of the concerns, the Maine State Chamber of Commerce and some other groups have come out against this initiative, not for the reasons that you've enumerated so far, but because of the way the money is raised, that it's a 3% income tax on income above $200,000, they say, for that. For that income level, we would be one of the highest in the country. Is that a concern of yours?
Yeah, it's a concern. We make the national news a lot these days, and not for great reasons. This would be one more thing. But if you look deeper into that, there's some real issues. A lot of the small business, and you've heard this, the five person and less are S corps or LLCs. In other words, they pay their business tax through the income tax. That in and of itself is just a reality of life. But what this inadvertently does is the tax, the upper rate for $200,000 above is going to be about 10.15% for them. If you look at their peers, the corporations, the international corporations are based here, the big ones, they're paying an 8.93% corporate rate. And so if you created a tiered effect that gives more tax, less of a burden to large corporations than you do to your own home small businesses. I don't think that was the intention, but that's the way this farms out. So from a tax fairness, from an argument of the haves and have-nots, you're looking at small businesses who are struggling to survive in many cases, now looking at a higher effective corporate rate than corporations who have means from around the country. So John, that's a concern.
Yeah, John, what about that? It's one of the biggest concerns about this is what this does to Maine's income tax rate, already high.
Absolutely. Happy to respond. First of all, we couldn't be happier to have the support of the Maine Small Business Coalition. If you look on our website, www.standupforstudentsmaine.org, you'll see a list of over 100 small businesses all over this state who are saying we need better schools, we need property tax relief. It's important to remember, 96% of small businesses are not impacted. What Question 2 does is it's a surcharge on income above $200,000. So you only pay this on the income that you, the taxable income above 200K. According to the Maine Center for Economic Policy, a supporter of this initiative, they actually wrote the initial initiative, it only impacts less than 3 to 4% of small businesses around the state.
So let me make this clear. If somebody makes $230,000 a year, $30,000
will have a 3% surcharge. The way I think about it, Jennifer, if you make $201,000, you'll pay the surcharge on the extra $1,000, which will be $30 more for our public schools for someone making $201,000. Just as an example, if you do the math, someone making $500,000 a year will pay a tax rate after this passes of 8.86%. That's about where they were in 2011 before we saw massive tax cuts for the wealthiest, because it only applies to the income above $200,000. So someone making $500,000 is just returning to about the same tax rate that we saw before the 2011 cuts. Anything less than that, you're paying less than what you even paid before 2011. So all we're trying to do is have a conversation about tax fairness. Right now, the operating assumption has been we'll continue to cut taxes for the wealthy in Augusta, and we'll continue to see property taxes rise just to make up for the state shortfall. We've seen a sales tax increase, which disproportionately will impact your middle class and low-income Mainers. We've seen substantial property tax increases over the past 8 years, while at the same time we're underfunding our schools and the wealthy are getting large tax breaks.
Well, we do have to take a break. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number 1-800-399-3566, our email talk@mpbn.net. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Lambert Coffin, legal advisors for Maine families in estate planning, probate administration, and will contests. Online at lambertcoffin.com. MEMIC, a workers' compensation insurance company dedicated to safer workplaces, fair treatment for all workers, and a strong Maine economy. On the web at MEMIC.com. And the Goldfarb Center for Public Affairs and Civic Engagement at Colby College, confronting complex issues through innovative programming, service, and scholarship.
The attacks have been personal and at times surprising.
I think it's disgraceful, and I think she should be ashamed of herself, if you want to know the truth.
Anything to avoid talking about your campaign and the way it's exploding and the way Republicans are leaving you.
Clinton and Trump debate for a third and final time. Will they sway voters when they meet in Las Vegas? I'm Robert Siegel. Join me Wednesday for special coverage of the final presidential debate from NPR News.
That's Wednesday evening at 9 on Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, and MainePublic.org with the NPR Fact Checker. Tonight at 9 on Maine Public Television, we'll broadcast the Your Vote 2016 Maine Calling radio program addressing the Maine referendum ballot question on the legalization of marijuana. Maine Calling will be examining many of the November ballot questions. They'll be shown at different times on Maine Public Television and available as an election resource anytime at MainePublic.org. Just click on Your Vote 2016. Again, Maine Calling this evening at 9 on Maine Public Television on Maine referendum ballot question number 1 on the legalization of marijuana.
Be a time for you all to say to me. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, a Your Vote 2016 program on the debate over question 2 on the November ballot. This would be a 3% tax on individual Maine income above $200,000 to create a state fund for public education. We have two guests in the studio today. John Kozinski is representing Yes on 2. He's campaign manager for the Stand Up for Students initiative, and representing No on question 2, Ed Cervone. He is the executive director of Educate Maine. If you want to join the conversation, our number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. I'm going to start with an email.
This is from Jean. I support education funding and have been actively involved in advocating for education. However, I am not supporting this referendum. Two reasons. Taxation and funding should be developed within the legislature and all needs debated and balanced by the Appropriations Committee. And also, this proposal does not carefully address the complexity of our different schools and their needs. And I'm going to let you, John, start with that because she is an opponent of question two. Do you not agree with Jean that this is not the place of the legislature to balance the needs of the state and come up with funding for education?
Thank you for your email, Jean. Obviously, I disagree. And again, in 2003 and 2004, the voters asked the state to fund this, to fund our schools appropriately. They've been unable to do it. There's a lot of elected officials in Augusta who support our local schools, who want to give more funding to schools. But when you see these tax cuts that benefit the wealthy again and again, it'll get harder and harder for the state to meet its obligation. We've waited over 12 years now for elected officials to try to figure this out, and they haven't been able to. So question two is the solution. This is simply saying you've been unable to meet the 55% mandate that was passed by voters, not for a lack of unwillingness, just an inability to figure it out. And we're prepared. We're giving the voters a chance to say this is the solution. This is how to do it. In response to all needs being met, the initiative says clearly these monies go directly to schools. And it's local decisions around school boards, around budget time, with parents and community engagement about how best to use these funds. These funds do not instruct communities how to use them. As I said, the only prohibition is it can't be used for administrative staff purposes. But this is actually trying to provide the resources to the communities to say, you do what works best for your community. The communities, the school boards, parents, teachers, they know what they need in their local communities. And question two doesn't try to dictate that. Question two just tries to provide more funding, hopefully provide some property tax relief, but most of all, provide more educational opportunities to our kids.
Ed, do you feel confident that if question two does not pass, that the legislature will come up with a way to provide 55% EPS funding?
I feel confident that more of us need to join with the MEA and get into a serious discussion of public funding for education. This is a snapshot look at education. We're looking at a debate around K-12, and people are forgetting that we have a public system that funds the development of people from birth to adulthood in the state. We don't have a discussion of what to do with birth to three, with infant toddlers and their development. We're not having a discussion about how we fund those kids once they go in the community college system or the university system. We've conveniently forgotten about adult education here and a variety of other pieces. So I think having this segmented discussion of education doesn't serve any well. In fact, it pits people against each other. So I would be welcome to see something like that. Now, relative to Gene's comment, two things real quick. Charlie Colgan is quoted in commentary on this as saying, basing a funding, long-term sustainable funding system for a key public need like education off a tiny bit of people on the income tax is unsustainable and volatile. The second piece, which we take issue with, is making taxation decisions and budgetary decisions piecemeal by popular messaging is problematic. And if people would remember, a few years back, we all fought off the taxpayer Bill of Rights twice.
But let me push back a little bit. In 2004, Maine people spoke very clearly,
yes,
and said we want our state to fund our schools at a 55% level.
Oh, no, I agree. And I think MEA has identified the problem. Is a vote went out over 10 years ago for the legislature to fund at a level. Now, what's problematic with the response is, let's have another vote to tell the legislature to fund that. So we have 10 years of them, whether they wanted to or not, did not do that. They did not have the votes. They did not have the will to do it. I don't know. But if the past is a great predictor of the future, then having another referendum to say, you better fund it this time, I'm going to bet they're not. But what you have different in this one is if they do not fund it, you're still going to be here with a new tax on the upper bracket of the income system. That's what we are guaranteed with. We're not guaranteed with funding.
Okay, I'm going to go to the calls now. I'm going to start with Dick calling from Fayette. Hi, Dick. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yes, good morning or good afternoon, I guess it is now. I'm calling you as a former member of a school board in a very, very small town. We have one elementary school, and everybody from sixth grade on is tuitioned out to surrounding schools in the area. While I was on the school board, our contribution from the state went from about 43% of our total budget, which is averaged about $1.5 million, down to where now the community is a minimum receiver. We receive 2% of our total school budget from the state, which means that over that period of time, the last 10 years, almost the entire burden of education has gone to the local property taxpayer. So I'm very glad to see this sort of initiative to put part of the thing back on income tax, which is a more progressive tax.
So, Dick, you're a supporter of Question 2.
I am definitely a supporter of Question 2. I'm a supporter of anything that will move education funding from the regressive property tax onto a more progressive tax like the income tax.
Okay, Dick, because you are a supporter, I'm going to let Ed, who's an opponent, respond to you. I mean, he's got a point.
No, he does. He absolutely has a point, and everybody had a point in 2004 as well, is if you want to alleviate the property tax burden, there needs to be another form of revenue. However, the avenue we went, which is telling the legislature how to fund in future areas, constitutionally is not acceptable. But also, we've just seen from reality, they don't do it. So the other thing that the callers need to remember is what we're doing here is asking to raise a state tax and then tell a legislature how to spend. We have separate pieces of government here. Ultimately, the decision about your property tax is going to be made at a local level. And although education is a large piece of it, I believe it's about 60% on average of a municipal budget, 40% has to do with roads, sewers, and everything else. So a promise of this passing leading to lower property taxes is the same promise you were handed in 2004 and did not receive because it's beyond our control.
And John, doesn't he have a point that down the road the legislature could use this money for general purpose aid to education?
No, absolutely not, Jennifer. The initiative is clear. This acts as a separate rainy day fund.
So 10 years from now, the legislature can't say we're cutting education funding. Wink, wink, nod, nod. We already have some extra coming in.
The language of this initiative is so clear. This acts as a rainy day fund for schools. The initiative is designed so the state continues to do their fair share for funding, and this is used to make sure every year we're getting to 55%. But I got to make one point really clear about this timing issue, and I really appreciate the support from Dick from Fayette. I just want to be clear. What we're hearing from the opposition is we support more funding for schools, just not this way. But again, we've waited a long time to solve this problem. And many of the folks that are on the opposition to this campaign, I want to make sure your listeners and viewers understand, are the same people who've been advocating for the large tax cuts for the wealthiest Mainers, the corporate interest of the Chamber of Commerce that have said these tax cuts didn't go far enough. So it just doesn't really it doesn't sit well with me that the same folks who've been pushing on our tax code to make the middle class pay more through property taxes like Dick and through sales tax increases that we've seen are now saying, well, we support more funding. This just isn't the way. There's only so many ways to fund schools.
Okay, so this is related to an email from Liz. She writes, raising taxes on earners of $200,000 a year is a bad idea. These people aren't rich. They're middle class. How about targeting earners in excess of perhaps $2 million? I don't fall into either category, but I know raising taxes on middle-class Mainers is a mistake. Sure, someone could be making just over $200,000 a year, have a couple kids in college, not be receiving student aid for those students. This would be have an impact on that person's life. Why was the number set where it was and not higher?
Let's be clear. If you make over $200,000 in this state, you are in the top 2% of all earners. You are in the top 2%. And as I said before, even if you're making if you're making $500,000 a year, you're going to go back to about the same tax rate you were in 2011.
Okay. Ed, do you want to say something?
Yeah. A clarification, one, for the listeners, is it's 200,000 combined household. So although it's called the individual income tax, it actually is applicable for a couple who combined earn over 200,000. So it's a household tax. The other issue within there is if you look around the country, there's a very popular movement around the millionaire tax, and that's aimed at the 1%, and that's been an effective and actually a really good public campaign to talk about the have and have not. I think it's very telling when we look at Maine that it wasn't the 1% and it's not millionaires. They had to go to 2% to get 16,000 filers for the math to work in order to get there. And I think that's a damning statement for us in our economy, is we're just not doing as well as the Massachusetts of the world, of the Connecticuts of the world. And people aren't as affluent and rich and wild as we'd been led to believe. And as another point of order, my organization did not come up and stand up for the tax breaks that were given. So just as a point of order, we are seriously here to talk about the opportunities that will or will not happen for the kids in the schools.
Okay, we're going to go to another call. We'll go to Robin, who's calling from South Portland. Hi, Robin. Go ahead.
Hi. I have an issue with the concept of tax fairness, given that it's the Citizens Initiative that, again, taxes of, you know, approximately 2% of our population. I have an issue that we're one of the highest tax states in the country. Frankly, I'm a transplant here. Both my husband and I are professionals. We're looking at moving out. I mean, I think Maine has a real concern about attracting professionals, physicians, lawyers, people in business. We also have a concern for creating jobs for our children. And if you're driving people out of the state, if it's 3% this year, what tells us it's not 5% in another year?
Robin, I think that you speak for many people, and I really appreciate you bringing up that point. We have a counterpoint email from Bill, who writes, I'm a surgeon in Bangor with two kids in public middle school. I'm happy to pay more in taxes for more funding for the schools.
Thank you, Bill.
I signed the petition for the initiative and look forward to voting to pass question two. So I want to move beyond the tax issue, but two sides, you know, folks who believe that this will turn people away from Maine. People will not want to come to Maine. It'll be hard to recruit high-income people to Maine, like Robin has mentioned, but also folks in Maine who do have a high income who are happy and willing to pay the tax. But we'll move on to Brand, who's calling from Belfast. Hi, Brand. Go ahead.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. This is a little background to this whole situation. In the 1970s, property taxes were so high that the legislature came up with a compromise. They would help cities lower their property taxes because so many Mainers couldn't afford to stay in their home anymore. They had to sell out to the more wealthy people from Massachusetts and other states. But they decided to come up with a revenue sharing program. And since that revenue sharing program was started, since 2010, the legislature has been reneging on that revenue sharing program. And when you take $150 million in tax cut for the wealthiest out of the state revenue, you're also removing it from the state economy and the multiplier effect, because those people don't spend that money here in Maine. They spend on all kinds of other things because their living expenses are already taken care of.
Brand, thanks for your call. And I want to go back to the revenue sharing. You guys were both nodding as he said that. Why is the bill not about revenue sharing?
It's a great question. I mean, I think the caller makes a good point. What we've seen, and I'm going to say it again, what we've seen in Augusta is more cuts for taxes for the wealthy and for the top 2%, and pushing more and more onto property taxes. That's the question for the voters right now. Is that fair? Is that right? Is it fair that in Maine right now, someone making $40,000 a year pays the same top tax rate as a millionaire, as someone who makes over $500,000? The top tax rate now kicks in at just under $40,000 a year. That's not fair. That's not right. So we're seeing these tax cuts go to the wealthy, and the property taxes are being jacked up. And that,
why not a referendum to deal with the tax cuts?
That's what this does. I mean, what this initiative does is say, you know, the middle class got maybe $200 back in income tax relief, cumulative, between the 2011 and 2015 tax cuts. For most middle class families, that's being consumed by property tax increases and a sales tax increase. And what the caller just said is exactly what we're hearing all over towns. The property taxes have been making up for the state shortfall time and time again. This is not a good path and not good for our kids.
Well, I think this is one of our concerns. Is this is a tax referendum. It has very little to do with schools, a little to do with kids doing better. It wish it would, but this is a response to some tax lowering. Your caller brings up an excellent point, And one of the things the listeners should think about is there's been deafening silence from the Maine Municipal Association here. They did speak out on your program, not your program, but MPBN, I'm sorry, Maine Public, a few weeks ago about why they're not getting into this. The concern is basically what your caller said is when you do tax policy by yes-no votes in a popular forum, you're moving one lever of a multi-lever system. So if this succeeds, we get 150 million. I predict we're going to see a dip in revenue sharing. We had an ugly debate around general assistance to service centers last year and the state cutting off funding there. So by playing with one lever of a multi-lever system, you're just going to create a shift. And someone's going to get hurt, someone's going to benefit, but overall, we're not going to get the net increase directed to the kids who need it. So he brings up an excellent concern.
All right. Well, we do have to take another short break. When we return more of your comments and questions, please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the Goldfarb Center for Public Affairs and Civic Engagement at Colby College, confronting complex issues through innovative programming, service, and scholarship. Lambert Coffin, advocating for individuals and businesses in Maine trial courts and administrative agencies. Online at lambertcoffin.com. And MEMIC, a workers' compensation insurance company dedicated to safer workplaces, fair treatment for all workers, and a strong Maine economy. On the web at MEMIC.com.
Take a state that's 90% white, and now refugees are on their way. Maybe Syrian refugees. In Montana, that is fueling widespread conspiracy theories.
I mean, there was a lot of sentiment against those refugees. We have no way to know what you're getting.
I'm Ari Shapiro. Big Sky Country wrestles with resettlement later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening.
On the next Fresh Air, Tim Wu tells us why he thinks advertising on the internet has gone too far.
We have this bargain that we made, and call it Faustian, you can call it whatever you want, that we have decided we have to have everything for free. And I think we're starting to pay for it in terms of our mental states.
Wu's new book is The Attention Merchants, the epic scramble to get inside our heads. Join us.
You can join us for that this evening at 7, right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling Today, your Vote 2016 program. Today's topic, the debate over the proposal to raise funds for Maine's schools. It's question two on the November ballot. We have representatives from both sides of the issue. Ed Cervone is Executive Director of Educate Maine, here to represent the No on Question 2 campaign. Representing the Yes on 2, John Kozinski, who's campaign manager for Stand Up for Students. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. We have an email from Penny. I support funding for education, but I have questions about the distribution of funds received from the Maine Lottery and the Maine casinos. In the year ending June 2016, the lottery announced it contributed $57 million to the state's general fund. Voters approved the Oxford Casino in 2010 with the promise that 45% of the profits would help public education. The voters believed this and supported the casino. Where is all that money going? Why should we vote for more taxation if these funds are being diverted to other state expenditures? What guarantee do we have that the same would not happen to this new revenue source? Ed, do you know?
Yeah, and I think it's illustrative of what we can expect to happen. There was a guarantee made to the legislature. If we raise a new form of revenue, it will be used for this at this rate, and they haven't met that. Casino, lottery. You can look all the way over to the home fund. The home fund is a little portion of your real estate tax transfer that goes to help low-income housing. We're supposed to have $8 million in that fund. The legislature has only spent $4 million this year. So, again, it's one more example of how ballot initiatives that go against the Constitution, which the legislature has the ability to spend money any way they want, and they've done it for 10 years by not funding 55%, we cannot expect that another referendum will fix that. But we can expect that if it passes, you will definitely have a higher income tax rate.
I got a couple things, a couple inaccuracies in what Ed said. The Oxford Casino money has gone to schools every year. And in fact, around the Oxford Casino, the language was supplement, not supplant, the state contribution to schools, which is exactly what question two does. It says these funds will be used to supplement, not supplant. So it's not accurate to say the casino monies haven't gone to schools. They have. It's about $14 million right now that's going to schools because of the Oxford Casino. Second, I want to say folks should read the Constitution of the state of Maine. Once this passes, this becomes the law for the state. It's written plain as day in the Constitution. The governor can't veto it, etc. I think, you know, I like Ed, I like Educate Maine, I like the work that they do. I'm sorry we're not on the same page on this. We've got to do better at funding our schools. And one of the programs that Educate Maine runs very effectively is the Teacher of the Year program. This is an arduous process of teachers who go through a process, and they just crowned the newest Teacher of the Year last week, Tammy Ranger, who teaches in Skowhegan. She supports question two. The current Teacher of the Year, Talia Edlin, I was just talking to her on Saturday, she supports question two. The previous Teacher of the Year, Jennifer Dorman, special education teacher up in Skowhegan, she supports question two. So at some point, we should listen to the teachers, the practitioners who are in classrooms right now saying, we need help now. We can't wait another 12 years for politicians to figure this out. These are the main teachers of the year who are telling us we have needs in our schools that are not being met, and we need to do a better job, and it starts with funding our schools better.
All right, we're going to go up to Sullivan and Mary. Hi, Mary. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I'm an 88-year-old widow living on Social Security, and I'm barely hanging on here, and I've been noticing. I've also been a teacher, and I've seen both sides, and I've seen my property taxes go up every year. Our town is one of the highest tax towns in Hancock County, and I'm wondering what's going to happen to people like myself, and there are many, and many people have had to leave this state because they can't afford to live here anymore because of the property taxes. And I'm just wondering what's happening to the old folks.
Mary, are you hoping that question two will alleviate your property taxes?
It certainly is going to help. Yes, I do.
And that is accurate. It will alleviate property taxes.
Because, in fact,
when the state doesn't fund the state contribute, the 55% that we talked about, they write into the state budget that property taxes go up just to make up for that shortfall. And I want to flag for folks, we talked about at the very beginning of your show, Jennifer, the formula is called essential program and services. I call it the Chevette model of public education for your viewers and listeners that remember that. The key word is essential. The 55% is supposed to be the floor, not the ceiling. It's supposed to be the needed to educate 180,000 kids with the bare basics. And so when the state doesn't fund their contribution, they write into the state budget that property taxes must go up. And we've seen a 25% increase in property taxes since 2008, just related to this failure to fund our public schools. But the story of Mary is happening all over the state. People, good people, seniors on fixed incomes who support their local schools and want to support their communities, but they're struggling. And they're struggling because we've seen the state give huge tax breaks to the wealthy, which has left the state without the resources to properly fund schools, revenue sharing, and other key services.
Ed.
I think she has a valid point, and it's of concern. In a past life, I was a municipal official in Maine. And the reality is that a local government that we hold dear, and I believe in it, is regardless of what the legislature does or what MEA or Educate Maine does, they have the final say on how things get spent. And I tell you what, when LD1 happened in 2004 to align the 55%, we looked for those property tax decreases. They did not happen. So what's false out there is to say if you vote for this, that your property taxes will go down. It has nothing to do with that. You need to talk to your local officials about that as to whether that's going to happen. And that's a concern because also written within the Secretary of State's piece on this is the fiscal note on it says clearly within the ballot language is, please note, there's nothing prohibiting the legislature from lowering the allotment, the baseline allotment of essential program services, the Chevette. They can downgrade that to a Yugo real quickly and still get that money. So you're not going to feel that. You're not given a guarantee because
of the structure of government we have on purpose. The state can't tell the locals what to do. The locals can't tell the state what to do. So linking one to the other is a nice idea, but history has shown it doesn't follow.
All right. We're going to thank you, Mary, for your call. We're going to move on to an email from Will. Many young professionals have a great deal of debt, doctors, lawyers, and so forth. What does an increase on household income over $200,000, which is often the combined income of two professionals with a combined debt level over $400,000 or $500,000 or more, do to the efforts to attract these individuals to the state or to the efforts to keep them? John.
Sure. Young professionals, like we heard from the surgeon up in Bangor, also want great schools. They also want reasonable property taxes. And so I think that it's important for viewers and listeners to understand, if you're lucky enough in this state to make over $200,000, you're in the top 2% of all earners. And again, you've seen two huge tax cuts in 5 years. So I believe that doctors, professionals, and others, most studies, we're somewhere in the middle, above average in terms of school performance, depending on the metric you're looking at. Just saw something come out 2 weeks ago that said we were eighth in the nation. That's great. We should aspire to be the best in the nation. And when you're looking at the best in the nation schools right now, you're looking at Massachusetts, which funds their schools much better than we do. We're looking at Minnesota, which has taken a huge drastic step forward, where the governor there tax the wealthy and put that money into schools, and they're seeing greater improvements in student outcomes. So we think there's examples there. And to use the sort of inverse idea, you would think by reducing the income taxes on the top 2%, like we've seen, that there would be a huge rush of people running into the state. That's simply not happening. We know that in rural communities, we're seeing population decline. This will help them. We're seeing property values decline in mill towns in our rural communities. And the way our state funding formula works, Madison, Skowhegan, Rumford, Bucksport, Millinocket, Old Town, they're all going to see increases in state funding because they're seeing a property tax devaluation that's occurring. We need great schools. Professionals will come where they see great schools and great communities, and question two will help us get there.
Ed.
Yeah, I mean, I think the writer, the guy who wrote in, raises an interesting point, which is the problem here is it's complex. There's a lot of considerations. It's not just income in, income out. There's a number of issues that are pressing on young people, professionals, the ones we are trying to recruit to the state. And that when you run a complex issue like this on a pure yes or no vote, with a lot of interest throwing money at it for a yes or no up or down vote, you lose the complexity, you lose the opportunity for your voice to be heard in this. This is a great issue for the legislature, and I know they haven't done the 55%, but we can't give up on our form of government. It's the one place where we are all represent, where we have a voice, where it can be weighed equally. You are not weighed equally here. You have a yes or a no option, and you don't have any guarantees for the outcome.
All right, we're going to move to Augusta. Garrett Martin with the Maine Center for Economic Policy is calling in. Hi, Garrett.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. Thank you for taking my call. Two quick things, Jennifer. One is, it's important, I hope folks recognize that when we're talking $200,000 in income, that's taxable income. So certainly there are some families that earn more, but once you take away deductions and exemptions and whatnot, you know, you're talking an income level that's actually a bit higher than that. But the other thing I was hoping to clarify is, I think there was a statement made earlier about, you know, what communities would actually benefit and what would be the implications for, you know, southern Maine communities versus northern Maine communities or elsewhere. And the reality is, you know, this will increase funding for schools that account for about 94% of students in the state based on our analysis at the Maine Center for Economic Policy. And I think it's really important that we acknowledge that, yes, there are communities in southern Maine that have very large numbers of students that will get a significant sum of money. But in terms of the percentage of the overall education budget, it's really the smaller communities that have lower valuation properties, so these small rural towns, that stand to gain the most from this. So going back to the example of trying to hire the foreign language instructor, you know, if we look at what has happened in the state in the last several years, as the state has reduced its support for local education, it's those low property value towns that have less capacity to compensate for that difference that
okay,
have been
Garrett,
hit hardest.
Thank
so
you. And since you're for question two, I'm going to have Ed respond.
Yeah, and thanks for calling in, Garrett. I think what's important to understand again here is it's not a simple issue. Is we've been asked, will you raise $150 million? Is this the best way to spend it on kids? Are you going to get the after school, the summer programs? Are you going to help rural areas get the teachers they need? Are you going to do more, even more important things? Are poor schools going to get nutrition for their kids, health care, and these types of things that are real needs that we're hearing from our teachers? And the answer is no, not based on throwing into a formula, because there's too many levels of decision-making being made. And I think what's important here, again, and MESEP was a big proponent of this at one point, Garrett's organization, is taxation by popular vote and budgetary decisions by popular vote is not a good way to conduct the government. And we won Tabor, fighting off Tabor twice on that argument. And we stood, when I worked for MESEP, and I was with the MEA, the Maine State Chamber, and the Maine Municipal Association, that was the argument that carried the day. So it's hard for some of us to understand why all of a sudden it's appropriate to use that type of form to tax people.
Okay, can Garrett, thanks respond? So much for your call. Yeah, we just have a little bit of time left, so I'm hoping each of you can say something kind of broad to leave us with some final thoughts as we consider how we're going to vote on question two. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for this forum. I think what I just heard Ed say, and what I heard Garrett say, this money is going directly to schools. Each community will have discussion about extended learning opportunities, summer school, after school programs, pre-K, career technical education, which we didn't get into today, which is a huge, which will see millions more of investment in career technical education after question two passes. But what's more, what we're doing with question two across this state is building a coalition of people who support our local schools and want to see more funding. The Maine Parent Teachers Association, the Maine Children's Alliance, the Maine Small Business Coalition, Maine Center for Economic Policy. We have over 100 school board members and town councilors and mayors saying we need this funding. We have over 100 small business leaders. Thousands of teachers across the state are saying we need more funding for schools. We can't wait for politicians in Augusta. We can't wait for the corporate interests to continue to advocate for more cuts to income taxes while people like Mary from Sullivan are in their homes and struggling to pay their bills. We need solutions now. Now is the time to finally fix this issue, put this to rest, and get to work on the hard work of actually using these resources to meet the needs of more kids all over the state.
Ed?
I think we got 10 years of great examples of what telling the legislature gets you. So it's beyond me why telling them again is going to get us a different outcome. That's, I think, the definition of lunacy. I would leave you on this. We don't think it will. We think schools and kids need this money, absolutely, and we want to work to that. We don't think this will deliver where it's needed. Check the Bangor Daily News out. They just editorialized against question two. The title says it all. With question two, Maine gets higher taxes, the same education system that needs improving. Please take some time to read it. I think it's very informative.
All right, and we will have a lot more coverage on the website of Maine Public, radio stations doing multiple stories on this, so please stay tuned. Thank you both for being here. Ed Cervone, Executive Director for Educate Maine. John Kozinski, Campaign Manager for Stand Up for Students Initiative. Nikki Shields ran the board today. We had additional technical help from John Keimel, Dan Works, and John Bradford. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.net. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at 8 and will be broadcast on television closer to the election. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, join me for a debate over question 3 on the Maine ballot. That's the one that requires background checks for gun sales between people not licensed as firearms dealers. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to a Your Vote 2016 edition of Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.